Hi everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Mira, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. I have with me today two very special guests. They are the authors of A Very Human Future, Enriching Humanity in a Digitized World. We have Rohit Tawa on one end, and we also have Steve Wells on the other. How are you today, guys?
Very well, thanks.
It's great to have you today on a podcast, and it's always a pleasure to have two guests on at the same time. I always find that the conversation is a lot more dynamic and interesting. So, to our audience as well, Rohit is a global futurist, award-winning keynote speaker, author, and the CEO of Fast Future. And of course, Steve is also a global futurist, keynote speaker, and a COO of Fast Future. And we're very happy to have them both today to talk about the book. But before we do so, I really want to ask you guys, what actually inspired you to become authors and start writing?
Well, I think we've both been doing a lot of futures work with clients around the world, advising, speaking to, consulting with. And one of the things we could see was that there was a real need to provide them with concise insights, but not just one view. And so we put our first book together, Future of Business, where we had 62 contributors giving a real tour de force of what was changing in the world. And we enjoyed the process of creating that book. And so actually started this business of publishing books about the future. And this is the fifth title. And this latest one, I guess, is the one that speaks most closely to our hearts, because it's really about how do we make sure that humanity is really at the center of the story when we talk about the future, rather than a problem that we have to deal with in the process of implementing lots of technology.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'd share those views. I think the thing is that it's so easy to get trapped into the, so what about the technology? What are the things that technology can do for us? How can we use technology to make us more efficient as businesses? But actually, we need to really understand what the broader perspectives, what the broader potential implications are of these technologies. So that's really, for me, what I think we're trying to do with the book, A Very Human Future. And pretty much everything that we do, it's kind of the so what piece, because so much of what we see portrays a very dystopian perspective, a very dystopian outlook. And maybe there's opportunity for us to create something that's much different, that's much more pleasant, much more human than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the vibe I got from the book. And I really want to focus on that. And there's a lot of questions I want to go through with you guys, because there's so much to unpack here. And I suppose we should start at the very top, since we live in such, I suppose, a great age when it comes to technology, with all the progress we've made in, I suppose, even the last 10 years. And if you go back, let's say in the 90s, and we were talking just before we started recording the podcast, if you told me, back when I was in my teens about this, I would not believe what my phone, for example, could do today. That's crazy enough, let alone what's happening in areas such as AI, what is happening in automation. And I suppose my first question for you guys would be, how do we remain human? How do we keep this human element in an ever-changing and dominating machine world? Where do we begin?
I'll start with a few thoughts. I mean, I think the first thing is we need to wake up. We've always, as humanity, assumed that the kind of wildest frontiers of technology were some way over the horizon. But now we have so much of a platform already out there, so many of the tools out there, and the technology is evolving at an exponential pace, that really what we'll see in the next 5 years is going to be mind-blowing compared to anything we've seen before. And that's either going to be really exciting, it's going to enrich our lives, it's going to take away the drudgery of a lot of our work, it will help us solve some of the biggest global challenges, like getting food, out of stockpiles where it goes to waste, into the mouths of people who are starving. But the only way we're going to do that is if we wake up, if we massively increase our digital literacy to understand the technology and prepare ourselves for this very uncertain future. Learn new skills, learn how to manage our own emotions when it's all going to get quite tense, and take responsibility for learning into new jobs, maybe even creating new businesses. And that's the wake-up call that we have to have in order to really see the technology as a real gift to humanity, rather than something which enslaves us.
Right, right.
I think it's really easy. I think, as I've already mentioned, to get wrapped up in, isn't this piece of technology absolutely amazing? What it could do, it can change our lives. That's great. But the real challenge and the real opportunity then is really about our mindsets, I think. So how can we actually look at the opportunities that technology represents for us? How can we actually adopt a new mindset? Because if we kind of continue along a default track and we always do what we've always done, then we'll always get what we've always got. And actually, maybe we need to take a step back. We need to think about how can we change what we do, how we address things, how we become aware of the opportunities. And that, for me, is what leads us into thinking about, so how do we lead people in our organisations? How do we encourage people to think about new perspectives? What are the kind of new skills we need in order to do that? So from a start point, that technology is the big driver of change in society, we very quickly, I think, begin to realise that actually it's a societal and a human challenge and opportunity we have, not a technological one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to build up on that, because I find it absolutely amazing to look at it on this sort of very positive side and how we can really make it all work for us. And it was something in the book, you know, the idea of the burst of possibility. And it really stuck out for me. Could you perhaps give our audience a brief explanation on what they might be and perhaps an example of how we can harness them?
Well, I suppose if intuitively at the moment we think about artificial intelligence as being able to help our businesses and our organizations operate more effectively, more right. productively, more efficiently. And the problem with that approach is that it actually takes people's jobs away potentially. So this whole issue of automation and the impact of automation. On the one hand, it seems to be good for business, but obviously on the other hand, it's bad for society. But if we think about the potential to allow artificial intelligence into our lives to help us do the things that we want to do, maybe the things that we choose to do, and we look in parallel at the kind of social structures that we need in place to allow us to do that. So how do we change education to be less about technical skills and more about soft skills, about being a good person, about learning how we can fulfill our lives outside of work? How do we use technology that allows us to actually access those skills, to try new things, to help manage our lives, to take the drudgery out of our lives? So, you know, that's kind of a very broad example, if you like, of how we think about AI at the moment and how it might start to help us change our lives into the future for the good.
I'll give another couple of examples. So one of the technologies that I think everyone's getting excited and frustrated about is blockchain. And now we're starting to see real, if you like, bursts of possibility in what the blockchain can be used for in meaningful ways. So, for example, in shipping, containers are shipped all over the world, but we keep very poor track of them. So if I'm a container owner, I might have 5 containers in a port but not know they're there, and I then rent another one to get goods to somewhere else. So now by putting a tag on every one of those containers, tracking it on the blockchain, and that means it's immutable. You can't wipe out that record. It's a permanent record. I can know exactly where every container is in the world all the time. If I do that, I can save something like 2 million tons of carbon emissions a year in moving around the containers, and also save the owners $5 billion a year. In the food industry, we reckon that 40% of all fresh food is wasted. And whether that's wasted or stolen or whatever happens, there's very poor management of food through the food chain. But if I can, again, tag every carton of food, you know, whether it's vegetables or fruit or rice or whatever, if I can tag every container, I can track it all the way through the food chain, and I can see instantly if some have disappeared in a port or in a warehouse somewhere, and I can then track, for example, the use-by date. I can say that those vegetables really need to be moved today, otherwise we're going to have to throw them away. And literally, if we can save even half of that 40% of fresh food that's wasted globally, we would instantly be able to cure world hunger or solve world hunger. So there's some really fantastic, you know, what you call bursts of possibility coming out of these technologies when we apply them to very real challenges. The other side of it is there's a massive waste of human talent going on when we do things like use our best skills to work out how to put your face on top of a cappuccino.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Great point there. And I want to talk a bit about the idea of responsibilities that corporations and big companies have when it comes to these technologies, and more importantly, when it comes to handling them. And of course, their user base and the data that comes with it. Now, I don't think it's unfair to say that there has been a lot of mishandling or blunders in recent years when it comes to data and user base experience. What do you think is the responsibilities of companies when it comes to this? Are they not doing something for these things to keep happening? Is there something that they can do so it changes, perhaps?
I mean, I think it's interesting that some of these data breaches tend to happen as a result of human error.
Right.
And we quite often think about all sorts of things, lots of different domains when something goes wrong. And increasingly often, I think nowadays, the issue is actually human error rather than the technology itself. So, you know, I think we need to put that in context. I think the privacy issues, the security of our information is going to become increasingly important as we go forward, as more and more of our lives are held online, are held in the blockchain maybe, our health records, our travel records, our employment records. So increasingly, providers of services and employers are going to have to be much, much more keener about how they actually secure that data. Interestingly, I suppose there's always been this kind of tug of war between the good and the bad side around how we can use technology for good and how we can use technology to subvert humanity for criminality use, for example. So maybe that goes on. But the responsibilities maybe of employers, for example, perhaps gets even broader than that, particularly when you start to think around potential implications of automation. So should employers become much more responsible for employees over a much longer time frame? So maybe thinking about how they're trained, both for the way jobs change at the moment, but also for potential jobs outside the organisation in the future, if they're made unemployable within that company through automation. So this kind of notion of responsibility at the employer level, I think, is much, much broader than just looking after data.
Yeah, I mean, picking up on that, I think there's been a massive change in the last few years in that relationship between companies, citizens, and the state.
Yes.
I think in the past, companies could focus on, if you like, doing a good job of what they did, making profits, and allowing the state to take responsibility for making sure they did it ethically. You know, the state set the rules by which markets operated, they set the rules for employment, and they basically sort of provided the safety net or the, you know, the monitoring to make sure that people were being good corporate citizens. But digital has changed all of that. The boundaries between sectors have disappeared. The difference between creating something and delivering it have disappeared. You know, with digital services, everything happens at the same time. And the massive oceans of data we're collecting have created issues that we've never thought about before. So now corporates have to kind of rethink what it means to be a good corporate citizen. And that's about my responsibility to the consumer, my responsibility to the environment, my responsibility to the employee. And as part of that, it's thinking afresh about how do I use this really rare asset, which is their data, or really valuable asset, an important asset. And so part of the rethinking of business that will go on in the next 5 to 10 years will be around how do we move from looking at data as something we need to exploit in order to generate more revenue, whether it's with predictive modeling or AI or whatever. Moving from that to saying, how do I protect that data on your behalf? And maybe things like the blockchain will mean that I won't even know who you are. That you will only have, I'll only have a token that represents you. I know that you're authorized by government to fly, but all I know is that you're passenger 796,001.
Yeah.
And I won't have any of the rest of your data. And I'll only have a one-time credit card number, because each transaction will have a new credit card number. So even if that gets hacked, no one can do anything with it. And so partly the evolution of technology will take away the problem, but I think the bigger thing is the evolution of corporate thinking on what our responsibility is. And that will roll into other things, like you know, what is the balance between consumption of resources today and, you know, preservation of the planet? It will roll into conversations around things like, what is my responsibility to make sure that people are earning the money to buy my goods and services, which might mean that I pay some sort of tax if I automate and have less people. So if I set up what's called a distributed autonomous organization, which has literally no employees, that exists entirely in software, take a look at insurance companies like Teambrella, who are already there, then the question becomes, do I need to put something back into society to make sure that we're educating, providing healthcare for, and infrastructure for the people who I want to buy my goods and services? So we're going to get into some very interesting issues, and that whole conversation about what the purpose of a company is really going to be put under the spotlight in a way that I don't think it has since the notion of a company was formed, you know, many hundreds of years ago. So I think we're at a very interesting time, and the data issue is just one of those pieces of the story that we're going to have to work through when we think about what is a good company model for the future.
I think for me that really plays into the sustainability space. So traditionally we've thought of sustainability as being very much about the external environment, about the planet, about climate change. But I think increasingly sustainability has been important to corporations so that they are able to demonstrate their broader worth to society. So I'm a good employer, I'm good in terms of how I use energy and so on. But up until now, that's kind of been a nice to do. It's been a bit of a PR exercise. I think increasingly that becomes a license to operate. And a really interesting template for that, I think, is the 17 United Nations sustainability goals, where what they're calling on nation states to do is to think about how their activities resolve issues like hunger, how they provide access to fair justice, how their policies create sustainable economics, as well as how their activities preserve life on Earth and are positive contributors to issues around climate. But that template, I think, also represents a really interesting perspective for companies to think about. And I really do believe that increasingly over the coming years, those different dimensions around those sustainability goals do become a very serious license to operate for businesses. And who knows, maybe even a template to think about how they're taxed based upon their behaviours as corporate citizens across those different sustainable dynamics.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And there was something you both touched upon there, and I thought it was a very fresh perspective in the book itself, and that's the idea of education and how it works, especially in an ever-changing digital landscape. Now, I absolutely love when I get to learn something about technology, and I recently completed my Python course for anyone listening, and you hopefully don't care, but it was an achievement for me, so I feel very proud about that. And I think that the idea of education, I think the book gets this across very well, is that it's one of the most important things, because the more people know, well, they can make better decisions based around that. Now, in your opinions, where do you see education taking on with, you know, the next 15 and 20 years? Because as we've seen, more traditional, you know, university routes are sometimes getting replaced. You know, people want to know more about the way digital works. They want to perhaps learn something else that isn't traditionally taught at a university course that has been around for a couple of hundred years or so. Where do you see this evolution taking us, and how will we change in the way that we learn?
I think we're going to have an explosion of models. I don't think we'll have a view of what, you know, if you like, the future of education looks like, or what the next model looks like. I think it might take 10 years to get to the next, you know, viable model. I think we're moving into a very experimental phase. Partly that's because the purpose of schooling is changing. In the past, it's been about, certainly in the UK, it's been about largely about generating economic units of production. So wherever in the value chain you were going to be plugged in, we educated you to perform what you needed to perform at that level. The game is changing, the skills required are changing, technology will do more of the jobs that people did. The new jobs we want people to do are the very human jobs around problem solving, around creating new products and services, around engaging with customers more, and around finding new markets and developing solutions for them. That all requires a higher level of intelligence, creativity, collaboration. So we're going to move from schools being the place where you kind of generated output, which was humans, to schools being places where we maximise individual potential and really help you learn about yourself, learn the skills that will help you move from job to job in the future, like collaboration, like problem solving, and really help you learn how to learn so that you can learn whatever context you move into. Universities, again, you know, we're seeing a shift going on that they've become very much graduate machines.
Yes.
And what we can see now is a kind of an even bigger shift in that direction with the idea of two-year degrees, where we just want to speed up the engine a bit. But I think we'll move over time as well. We'll begin to see that actually universities have a different role. Their role is really to develop higher knowledge in society, to pioneer the research. And we might go back to a more traditional view of what these centres of learning are for, which is really to break boundaries, to allow people to study in depth. So we'll see different models and different types of universities. And the other thing I think we'll see and have to see is a repurposing of a lot of the assets in society. Schools, colleges, universities, meeting rooms. My guess is this building, you know, past maybe 6 o'clock, most of the rooms are empty, my guess is.
Yep.
And how do we repurpose all that facility in society for education? So you having learnt Python, in a year's time, you might be in a position to teach people Python, but you're not going to do it in the day when you're doing a day job. But in the evening, you might be very willing to go and teach people in the community who want to learn Python, maybe in the same studios as you work at in the day. Maybe it's in the meeting room in a lawyer's office. But we'll start to think very differently about how we make much more efficient use of society's resources, and that's physical space and the people who know something, to teach the people who need those skills. And particularly for the industries of the future, it's very hard for a university or a school to be up to date on what's going on with synthetic biology, 4D printing, nanomaterials. But the people who are working in the space and who are creating those ventures have a vested self-interest in ensuring that there's a skill set coming through that can work in their industries. So they might be willing to teach in their spare time to develop those skills. So I think we're going to see lots of experiments around the redesign of the education system. Obviously, online has a role in that. We'll probably go too far in trying to push people online, and then we'll come back to realising the value of physical contact. But I hope the big thing we start to do is really start to look at how we educate the community and how we bind the community together through education.
I think that one of the other things that strikes me is one of the things we're sort of talking about is a very complex and uncertain future. So, you know, we're talking about ideas that we anticipate will be challenges and opportunities for us at the future. But I suppose we don't necessarily know the scale of these. And one of the issues I think that speaks very clearly to that is some of the projections about the nature of jobs for kids currently entering primary school. So maybe up to 2/3 of them will be working in jobs that don't exist right now. So, you know, that's one of the challenges that we have in terms of preparing children and young adults for a future workspace. So one of the critical skills seems to me to be, how do we help people think about uncertainty and complexity in the workplace? Because at the moment, lots of our processes, lots of our systems, lots of our approaches are really about giving ourselves a full sense of comfort, a full sense of certainty about something that's increasingly uncertain. And maybe that's at the heart of what people fear about an increasingly digitized future. So, you know, going back to one of the things Rohit said earlier on about how do we bring some of these things into people's awareness, maybe that's one of the critical things that education, both in school and outside of school, can actually help society get to grips with. Just this whole notion of, you know, how do we embrace uncertainty? How do we embrace change?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do suppose when you think about all of the different service people, do you know, what are you looking for with an employment? What are you looking at when you get a job? It's stability and not having that level of uncertainty. And I think that's absolutely fascinating stuff there. And to close off, guys, I want to ask you the question I actually ask all the authors that come on the podcast, and that's, what are you currently reading, or do you perhaps have any recommendations for our listeners?
I'm rather boringly, I'm reading, it might sound boring to some people, I'm reading a fascinating report by actually Bank of America Merrill Lynch, where a team of their researchers have really dived very deep into some key technologies and how they might play out in the next 5 years in across society. And I think, you know, you might expect a bank to focus on the investment story, but they've really focused in a very deep way on how these technologies could permeate society and how they'll change everything around us, or could change everything around us. And it's fascinating to see the analysis, and it's a very compelling read, actually.
I'm going to kind of focus on something that I'm kind of looking at rather than reading, if you like, because one of the things that we often say to people is that if you want to try something during the workday to embrace or to connect with the future, then look at some videos online, just short videos, people like Mashable, people like World Economic Forum, that actually focus on really short, punchy videos about technology maybe that's starting to change. And I mean, farming is just one that's quite popular at the moment, and just the radical changes that we might see in farming. But people like the World Economic Forum are also putting very short, lovely short videos out there just about great innovative ideas right now. They're not necessarily about technology. They're actually about new thinking. So, you know, if you really want to engage in the future, if you really want to engage in innovation and kind of don't feel you have much time to do that, then just look at some of those short videos. Take a few minutes each day just to get a sense of the nature of change that we're seeing right now. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, great stuff. And of course, for our listeners, if that sounds interesting to you, there will be links in the description so you can go and you can check out this content for yourselves. And with that, Rohit and Steve, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast. It's been great having you on.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much for having us.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed our conversation today, please feel free to check out the links below. No, as a matter of fact, you should check out the links below, because in there you can find everything about A Very Human Future, of course, links to the book, and of course, social media profiles, so you can get in touch with us and let us know what you think about today's podcast, and also links so you can check out Fast Future and see what they're up to as well. And I'd like to thank you again for joining us on this week's podcast. It's always a great pleasure to have you on, and I look forward to seeing you next week.